also often say learning empathy is learning ballet. You have to do it in front of a mirror, because if you're just trying to learn steps or positions and you get no feedback, how are you going to know if you're doing it? And most of us have a trusted colleague. And when we show our own vulnerability and say, I want to do better at this, it makes us more human.
I'm Janet Ioli, and you're listening to Power Presence Academy, leadership with less ego and more soul. Join me each week as we talk about the deeper and provocative leadership and personal development topics that drive real change. Slow down, react less, reflect more, and lead with less ego and more soul. Let's go. Can you learn to be more empathetic? I hear over and over again in the work that I do, I need to be more empathetic, or this person needs to be more empathetic. Or how do you learn to have more empathy? Well, there's no better person to talk to than Dr. Helen Reiss, who is the founder and CEO of Empathetics, a company that actually provides empathy training to hospitals and to doctors, and actually has been expanded and has provided empathy training all over to help people learn to become more empathetic. So yes, the answer is yes. And I have this distinct pleasure in talking to Dr. Reiss today about what she thinks we need to do to develop more empathy. She's also the author of the book, The Empathy Effect, which I'll link in the show notes today, because I think it's a great book, a great starter book to learn more about this whole area of how do you start to build empathy. So Dr. Reiss, I'm thrilled to have you today, as I mentioned in the introduction, because I think this is such an important topic. I just want to get started by asking you a little bit about how you got interested in this whole area of empathy and studying and teaching empathy.
Well, Janet, thank you for having me. And it really stems way back early in my life. My parents were part of the World War II casualties, and I grew up with a strong sense of when people are mistreated, how traumatic and how enduring those experiences can be, and how many extra challenges that poses for people. And I always had an eye toward a healthcare profession, I think, particularly because of a need to try to help people who are hurting and suffering. And then my interest in psychiatry really led me to having the most intimate conversations with people and learning what's the impact when any person, whether they're a worker, a clinician, a patient, a person in a business organization, what's the impact when they are not understood? Because I always believed if we understand people's backstories, we have way more generosity and way more ability to really connect and work more collaboratively.
Yeah. Love the way you phrase that, understood, because I see that in my work as well, is that a lot of the defensiveness that comes up or misunderstandings is feeling people not feeling understood. So I love that. Let me ask you this. So we keep using this word empathy. It's definitely a buzzword in the business world. And it's, oh, well, doctors need to have more empathy, or leaders need to have more empathy. How would you define empathy?
Empathy, I think, is one of the most misunderstood concepts. So I'm glad you're asking. It's really a capacity. Some people think it's just a feeling that you just feel bad for people. But it's a capacity that involves a lot of cognitive perspective taking, like trying to imagine what is this like for this other person, and also the automatic feelings that we have inside when we see somebody suffering or in pain. So it's a combination of perceiving what people are going through, processing that, and motivating a caring response. So it's really a loop, not just a static thing.
Yeah, and that's a really great way to actually put that. And what I'm thinking of is I'm thinking of these cliches of, I feel your pain, right? Really, that's what you're talking about. And can you feel someone else's pain if you haven't been through it? Because that's a big thing that people always say is, well, you've never been through this, so you can't be empathetic towards me.
That's a wonderful question, because there was research done in the mid-2000s where neuroscientists actually looked at the brains of people who were seeing other people in pain. And our own pain receptors light up when we see somebody else suffering. So the phrase, I feel your pain, is really not just a figure of speech. So if I saw you stepping on glass, the parts of my body that if you stepped on it with your foot, that area in my brain would be lighting up in pain.
Wow.
And it's just fascinating because we really are wired to feel each other's pain. And it's for two reasons. One is to help the person. And the second is to teach us, don't step on glass. So because if we didn't feel any pain, we would think, oh, I guess that's an okay thing to do. So it's really hardwired into us.
Yeah, no, I imagine that would be the case. I think about leaders in organizations, right? And they're told, be more empathetic. I'm assuming doctors, right? You work with the medical profession and be more empathetic. And yet there's a need in some of these professions to be a little bit more, what's the word, distant or unattached, I would think, would have. Right. So the doctor, a surgeon who's going to operate on someone can't have that attachment. Same thing with leaders. If I may lay you off at some point, or I have to work on your performance. So if we have that innate sense of empathy, do you think you can teach people to become more empathetic in these settings?
Well, our research definitely shows that can happen. And this idea of compartmentalizing, which leaders and physicians need to do, is really important. So empathy is not like a spigot that you turn on and you just have it at the same level constantly all day, every day. It's definitely a mutable trait. And we are most empathetic when we're not stressed, when we can perceive what other people are going through, and when we have the internal resources to respond. And as you say, you don't want a surgeon thinking about the pain that the person's in while they're doing an operation. You
right.
want to be focused on the task. So there are times when empathy is not useful. So when someone's doing a task like that, with leaders, they need boundaries to be effective leaders. So they can't be emotionally involved in every person's situation or challenges. But having an inkling when somebody in your workforce is going through a rough time, facing a death of a parent or God forbid, a child or somebody very sick or having people to take care of, empathy would mean that you show enough curiosity to say, we want to support you. What do you need to do your job? And sometimes maybe a person needs time off, or sometimes a person needs to actually get a different job. So the caring hopefully leads to a collaborative conversation where you're not taking on the burden of the person, but you're trying to solve what their needs are to be effective in the workplace.
Right. And as you talk, what I'm hearing is that there's a balance, right? And
yes.
So between the compartmentalizing. And so can you, and I'm asking you this because I think you do this, right? But can you teach how to balance that, how to be more empathetic? And the other word I'm thinking of as you talk is there's attunement that's required as well, right? Attuning, you know, being attuned to other people. So are all of these things teachable?
Yes. So the answer is, for the most part, yes. Empathy is now considered a teachable skill. I will say there is a small percentage of the population that does not have the neural networks for it. Some of these people are sociopaths. Some of these people are incapable of feeling pain of others. And I'm not talking about that very small percentage. I'm just talking about the vast majority of people have a capacity for empathy. And the teachable part is what we do at Empathetics is we train people in emotion detection, in learning how to interpret nonverbal cues, and specifically learning accurate ways to perceive what people's facial expressions are revealing, because we make the biggest mistakes when we're not looking at a person's face and we're assuming that they're angry when maybe they're sad, or maybe they're fearful, but we think they're being contemptuous. So these mistakes really move us away from empathy and move us into judgment. So your word attunement is exactly what we're teaching, is how do you pick up enough cues from the person's verbal and nonverbal displays to be attuned to, is this person just afraid, or are they like angry about something? And our big teaching is, how do you remain curious? How do you remain open to learning? I'm not sure I understand you. Could you say more about that? Instead of, well, you seem angry, but you have no right to be angry. We're treating you so well here. So there's so many mistakes.
Jumping to this conclusion about what the other person is experiencing. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's where you really start forming rifts.
Yeah. Now, as you talk about that, I would assume that some people listening are thinking, okay, but isn't empathy innate? And wouldn't that be fake? So if I'm trying to manipulate you by figuring out, well, what do I need to do right here? I'm not really feeling it. What would you say to those people?
I love when that question comes up, because when we were first doing empathy training with physicians and clinicians, we would hear this, aren't you just teaching them how to act empathetic? So again, neuroscience backs us up, because part of the empathy training is making a meaningful eye contact with a person and not trying to manipulate them by reading their facial expression, but really trying to understand, like, where are they coming from? What's the emotion here? And when people start doing these things and taking notice of the posture of a person, like all of these nonverbal communications and how they're affecting us, we can actually become more empathetic just because we're paying more attention. So a lot of times people would say, well, I would just start doing these things because we were told to do it.
But
then something started to happen. Like, I actually started to feel like I cared more. Like, one clinician just learned how to say, that must be really hard for you, because she was always giving bad diagnoses and she wasn't really sure like what to do when people started crying. And so she said, this amazing thing happened when I started making eye contact and saying, this must be hard to hear. She said, all of a sudden, I started to really feel something for these people.
Right.
So
she was tuning in to herself, probably. So that part of herself that maybe was shut off. Yeah.
It's like opening a channel.
Yeah.
And I think this is true for leaders and for physicians, is that they have such a cognitive load to make the right choice, to make the right decision that's going to have an impact maybe on a whole organization or on a person's entire health. And sometimes all of that cognitive activity moves us away from the more affective or emotional part of people. And so I think it's not that leaders are lacking. I think sometimes that what they're thinking about is so tantamount to the success of an organization that they forget that the true success is having happy people working with you and for you.
That's such an important point. And I'm going to highlight what you just said, because I think it's so relevant to even a lot of the work that I do, that concept of the high cognitive load. Because I talk to executives all the time that they'll say they're getting feedback, you need to be more empathetic. You need to stop and ask people how they're doing and all of that. And people will say, you don't care. And the response, and I just heard this last week, the executive will say, well, of course I care. I care. I've just got so much on my mind. It's exactly what you just said. I've got so much on my mind right now that I'm just
overloaded. Yes.
Yeah.
And so many times people, and this goes for leaders and all clinicians, they think that if they show caring, it's going to take too much time.
Right. Yes.
That somehow this is going to be a 10-minute thing, a 30-minute thing that they don't. So they're afraid to say, how are you? But
yeah,
they don't
realize. It's going to go into this long thing. Right. Yes.
Most people know how busy executives are, then they know doctors are just off the charts busy. So if you say, how are you, or like, how was your daughter's graduation, or how was the wedding, they're not going to start talking for 20 minutes. They're going to say, thanks for asking. It was really special. Sometimes people don't realize it's just a touch point of seeing someone as a human being rather than just another worker. And so one leader who was getting feedback that I think people weren't enjoying working for him, people said, well, who are some people in your organization that you like? And he said, I actually don't know the names of the people in my organization. He was so removed from maybe his first direct reports he knew, but the rest of the people were just workers. And one of the things that physician leaders are now encouraged to do is to go on rounds with the clinicians and actually see what their day is like. And that is totally transformational, where all of a sudden you're out of your front office, but you're seeing what the work is that your people are doing. And when you said earlier, isn't it easier to have empathy when you've walked in those person's shoes rather than trying to just imagine? And it absolutely is. When you have walked in the shoes of other people, empathy comes much easier.
And it goes back to the attunement. It helps you become more attuned to what's going on in your organization, which helps you with whatever it is you're doing anyway. So it's also connected, but I think it's the time thing. People will always say, I wish I had the time to do that.
And some leaders decide that they're going to make the time. And one physician leader actually started showing up, but he stopped wearing his suit. He started wearing what the people in the organization were wearing so he wouldn't stick out so much. And at first, people were just very distant and old. And then he started hanging out in the coffee room. And before you knew it, he was getting the true scuttlebutt about what people liked, what people didn't like. And he was able to make the tiniest changes that made the biggest difference in his organization. So sometimes we have to get out of the ivory tower and walk the walk.
Yeah. And it's eye-opening. I think that's the other piece, is being in touch with what is going on. So great story there. What do you think are some key things that a leader can do if they want to become more empathetic? So practically. So you talked a little bit about some of them, the walking around, the all of these sorts of things, but is there anything else?
Well, I think a place to start is like to just say, I'm going to be more empathetic, is I'm going to start exercising. Until you decide what day and where you're going to do it and for how long.
Man,
it's just
right.
An idea. So I would say a really helpful place to start is think about someone with whom you have maybe a little bit of a conflict. Maybe they're coming late to work all the time, or maybe they're not meeting deadlines, or it can be anything. And we naturally tend to go into judgment and assumptions. They don't care. They're not motivated. So when you choose a person where you could engage some curiosity and say, what if I just got to know that person and just said, how are things going? And instead of starting with, I'm noticing you're late or whatever they're not doing, just say, I'm just curious, how are things going? Are you happy here? And you might be surprised to hear that there is a backstory for why somebody's either disengaged, distracted, worried. I had this happen myself with when I was doing research, and one of the team members was always missing deadlines. And everyone loved this team member, so nobody was like jumping on the person. But I finally had to call and say, I just want to understand, is the work still interesting to you? And then I found out she had this medical condition that she didn't want to, quote, burden the team with.
Oh.
And it meant that she was going for a number of weekly treatments. And empathy would have really helped if she said, I've got something, I don't want to go into it, but it's going to mean I'm not able to be as, you know, timely as possible. But when I approached her with empathy, it was like, can you just tell me, are you still engaged? And then I got the backstory. And then everyone pitched in to help, right?
And that could be, like you said earlier, transformational for you as well. Wow, why didn't I ask? I didn't know. How would I have? Or she didn't feel comfortable telling you all of those things.
And people are so different. Some people would tell the team right away, I've got this thing. And other people are like so worried about burdening people that they keep it to themselves. And then inadvertently, it becomes a burden because they're not meeting their deadlines. So we have to appreciate how differently people respond and react to their own challenges.
Yeah, that's a great story and it's a great advice. So I'm just going to ask, this is a topic that we could spend the entire day on. So because of the brevity of this podcast and people don't have an entire day to listen to them, I try to keep them short. So I'm going to ask you just a couple more questions while I have you here, because this is so, so wise and helpful. You just talked a little bit about advice. Is there any other advice you would give people who are thinking, oh, I do want to do this. I do want to be more empathetic. And some of the things you just mentioned, I can try. But is there anything else that you would tell them that you haven't said?
So I think one of the really strongest ways for people who really want to be more empathetic is to give permission to people that they trust very closely to give them feedback on how they come across. Mm-hmm. And now this requires a tremendous amount of trust, but most top leaders do have their first rank or second rank people, and they usually have a person that they really have cultivated trust with. And to just say, I realize I'm not as empathetic or tuned in or attuned to people in this organization, and I want to do better. But I need a mirror because I'm blind to what I'm doing. I'm just being myself. So could you give me some examples where you may have observed me doing something where I didn't show empathy, or where you felt a little bit of extra something might have made a difference? Because I also often say learning empathy is learning ballet. You have to do it in front of a mirror, because if you're just trying to learn steps or positions and you get no feedback, how are you going to know if you're doing it? And most of us have a trusted colleague. And when we show our own vulnerability and say, I want to do better at this, it makes us more human. It doesn't mean we're now diminished in that person's eyes. It means that we are really open to learning and want to get feedback. These are delicate things, and I think it's hard for leaders who think they have to be perfect to actually ask for this kind of help. But it's the exact thing they need to do, which is to admit to themselves, I want to be better at something, and I've gotten to the top of my game in business, but I haven't gotten to the top of my game in my interpersonal relationships.
I love that. I think this whole concept of the mirror is so important, because we don't see it. And then we see it sometimes after the fact, or when somebody gives us the feedback. And what I find, Dr. Reese, is that a lot of people are really surprised when they get the feedback. It's really, that was not my intention. Or, right? Wow, I didn't realize that I came across that way. And also giving people grace, I would think of, it's going to take practice. It's not going to be a light switch.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So much as a leadership coach is intention. If you start your day intending to be more open, more curious, less judgmental, and you actually put a sticky note on your computer or something with that intention, that every time you look at it, you're like, oh yeah, I need to back off. And I think the curiosity is really the key. Yeah,
I agree with you. I can't agree with you more. It's just not jumping to conclusions right away. So I agree with you. So this has been phenomenal. I think you've given us some practical advice and practical actionable things that people can do. So let me ask you, is there anything that I haven't asked you, any parting words of wisdom that you'd like to leave us with that I may not have addressed or you may not have addressed today?
Well, Janet, I think we are in very turbulent times at this moment in history. There are wars going on. There's unrest in our own country. There's so many challenges, and people are just so polarized and finding many reasons not to connect or to hunker down and, you know, withdraw. And at the heart of it, most people long for connection and a sense of belonging. So I would like to leave the parting message that it's more important than ever right now to help your people feel like you value them. Nobody's perfect, but try to look at what people are doing for your organization and for you. And if something's amiss, just really try to engage your curiosity or get someone to check in with somebody before people are walking around with more animus and more judgment and acrimony, and really think about the saying, everyone is fighting a battle you cannot see, to realize everyone's got their own life and their own circumstances that are swimming around in their head every day when they're at work. And we're only seeing a part of a person, and we have to appreciate that we're all human and we all just need to have our best to be brought out in a spirit of empathy and caring.
Well said. That's really great parting words to leave us with today. I think that we all need connection, and I see it daily, you know, in organizations. I see that we've got all the cognitive pieces of what can be done, but it's also who are we being while we're doing things. And I think that's really what you're talking about. So I really appreciate you spending the time with us today, Dr. Reese. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure, and I really commend you for the incredible work you do.
Thanks for listening. And always remember this, every single moment you have a choice in what you say, what you do, and how you make people feel. Pause and make those choices wisely and intentionally, because every single moment, those choices are who you become as a leader. See you next time.